Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain, filling in for Brian Mackey. Last week, Governor J.B. Pritzker announced a statewide mask mandate for all daycare and PK through 12 schools, private and public. Here's a clip of that announcement explaining his decision-making.
Given the CDC's strong recommendation, I had hoped that a state mask requirement in schools wouldn't be necessary, but it is. The Delta variant is highly transmissible, more so than any other previous forms of this virus. Because of the lower rates of vaccination among teens aged 12 to 17, because the vaccine has not yet been approved for children under 12, because there are many people who are reluctant across some of the districts to adopt the CDC's guidance, effective immediately, all P-12 schools and daycares in Illinois must follow the CDC guidance of universal masking inside, regardless of vaccine status.
And the governor's decision was met with criticism from some parts of the state. Republican State Senator Darren Bailey, who is one of three Republicans who've announced they'll be running against Governor Pritzker in 2022, had this to say.
Today, Governor Pritzker put his personal political agenda in front of what we know to be in the best interests of our students and their education. Governor Pritzker once again wants to force mask mandates on school children. This unilateral move without engaging the legislature does not make him a leader. It makes him a failure. The science and the data has clearly shown us that school-age kids are not statistically vulnerable to critical illnesses or death from COVID-19. The governor has not produced any new evidence to contradict these clear statistics. Data from all over the world has also shown us that schools are not the drivers of community outbreaks. That is a fact. What we are witnessing today is a power grab by the political class. It's time to stop this nonsense. I will continue standing for freedom and common sense policies. As parents, your freedom to make the best decision for you and your family matters.
All right, so we've got a lot to talk about today, and joining me to discuss the school mask mandate and the latest COVID-19 news are Dr. Vidhya Sundaresan, professor and chief of infectious disease at SIU School of Medicine and medical advisor to Sangamon County Department of Public Health. Doc, thanks so much for joining us on the 21st this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Becky Smith, an epidemiologist and associate professor of pathobiology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Becky, thank you for coming on again.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. And listeners, we want you to join in this conversation. Give us a call at 800-222-9455. How do you feel about the statewide mask mandate for schools? Are you comfortable sending your kids to school this year, and why or why not? We can also take other questions on COVID-19, the Delta variant, and breakthrough cases. Again, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at the 21st Show. And you can find things on our website about all things COVID, 21stshow.org. All right, so let's get into some of these questions here. Dr. Sundaresan, we'll start with you. Curious about your reaction as a doctor to Governor Pritzker's mask mandates on all K through 12 masking in school. So what are your initial thoughts there?
I think that's totally in compliance with what CDC has recommended with the increasing rates of Delta and what we know about the nature of the virus, that it is extremely transmissible and it has a tendency to cause severe disease. I definitely think it's a good thing to have in place till we're able to mitigate that and get the numbers lower down.
And what is your response to that clip we heard from Senator Bailey there in the introduction about this, you know, needing to be more of a family-oriented decision? What's your take there?
So we have seen from the data we have with regards to in-school transmission even earlier before the summer break, we knew was low. And children do not manifest with severe disease in high numbers as much as people who are vulnerable and of advanced age are. Those definitely I do agree with. But, the data we have with regards to low school transmission was with the masks in place, with the physical distancing, and with hand washing. So we did have the mitigation, public health mitigation strategies in place for that data to be generated. So yes, I think families do have a say in what's going on, but at this point where our transmission rates are so high, I think we really need to do what would benefit us to bring those numbers down, to be able to be in a better situation where, you know, we can jointly make better decisions.
And you're thinking that multifaceted, layered approach is the best way to get there.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. All right. Becky, we're going to go to you. You've worked on developing the SHIELD program, and it was announced last week that IDPH is going to expand that and do free testing for K-12 public schools in Illinois. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I've got a kindergartner, and how in the world are we going to logistically, how do you see this coming together with these littles trying to, you know, spit in these tubes? You know, is there a plan in place for how exactly we go about doing the testing in schools?
There is a plan in place, and we have been working with this thanks to a lot of support from IDPH and also funding from the Rockefeller Foundation. We've been able to, over the spring, develop a lot of useful ways to approach testing in these schools using the saliva. We know that we have schools that have been regularly testing pre-K students with the saliva test, and they've found ways to do that. So we can definitely, with the SHIELD Illinois program, help schools set up testing in all age groups, all school situations. We have experience doing it, and we know that we can get it into place.
Excellent, excellent. And so when the students are tested, do we know if they'll, you know, go to the nurse's station? Will this be a sort of a line in the gymnasium? And then the second part of that is, how will the results be processed?
So there are multiple ways of getting the testing going, and it really depends on the school setup. So some schools have the line in the gymnasium approach. Others have what they call the drool train, where they have a cart that goes from classroom to classroom, and students can come out to the hallway and provide their sample and then go back to class. So it really can be personalized to the way the school works, the school building. All of those factors can go into place. As far as how the tests are processed, there are labs all over the state that can run the tests, the sample collection groups. We'll collect the samples, take them to the labs, and then the results are shared with the parents through, we have an app-based sharing or a web portal, and also with the schools, so the schools know what their results are coming out as, and they know how to help out the students who may have tested positive, and they have a lot of assurance as to who's testing negative.
Gotcha, gotcha. And Becky, I wanted to get your thoughts on the governor's mask mandate as well.
Well, as the parent of two children under 12 who are therefore not vaccinated, I was very happy to hear about the mask mandate. I agree with what Dr. Sundaresan said, that we know that we did a really good job in the spring of keeping infections within schools low, but that was with masks and with distancing. And we also know that a lot of schools will be coming back to full or close to full in-person attendance. And so distancing is going to become more difficult. And when we talk about those layered interventions, if we have to decrease something like distancing, we have to increase something else like compliance with mask wearing. And we know that students can wear masks. It can be a little difficult to enforce, but once everybody gets the hang of it, we know that it will work and it will keep our students safe. And again, as the mother of a child who will be going back to school in person, I'm really happy to see that they'll be wearing masks.
Okay, excellent take. And listeners, if you're just joining us, We are speaking with Dr. Vithiya Sandaresan, professor and chief of infectious disease at SIU School of Medicine and medical advisor to Sangamon County Department of Public Health. And also with us is Becky Smith, an epidemiologist and associate professor of pathology at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. We can take your calls about the governor's mask mandate for schools in Illinois or any other questions you might have about COVID-19, the Delta variant, or anything else for our guests. Call us now at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And we've got a caller, Randy, from Timber Township. Yep. Randy, are you there?
Yes, you bet. Yeah, thank you. Listen, first of all, I know you have very difficult jobs, and I very much appreciate it, you doctors and infectious disease people that are trying to give advice to the governor, who I think's done overall a good job. However, let me help you out with something here. In this particular one case, I'm going to unfortunately have to push back a little bit. Our school board here in this small rural community took a very courageous act back a year or so ago, or beyond a year ago, and during this pandemic decided to do something unusual against the grain and kept its schools fully open and ran the buses every day, all the kids, every grade, fully open all year. Now, our kids now in our district, think of this, they're going to be ahead finally, in a rural district. They're going to be ahead of the game. Every child, a full curriculum year ahead, because they went to school all year. Our district, our superintendent enjoys now, our school board and teachers enjoy more public support. He could pass a referendum and build the Taj Mahal if he wanted to now, because the public has more support for our school system because he kept it open.
All right.
And responsibly.
Randy.
And there was no disease. If there was ever anybody with a problem, they right away notified everybody. They had a.
All right, Randy, thank you so much for your call. We're going to go to another call. We've got Christine in Savoy. Christine, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, and I'm very happy that gentleman had a school district where they could be fully open and successful, but there is, you know, a difference between a small rural school district. I teach in Champaign, and we have over 10,000 students, and last year was very, very hard, but the first thing I want to tell people is we did not lose a year. It was very difficult, but we worked very hard to do the best we could by our students and our families and keep them safe. I just wanted to call and say that I am very, very happy about this mandate from the governor. It takes it out of the school district's hands. He can play the boogeyman and be the bad guy, and I appreciate him doing that. But we will not be able to socially distance with 24 kids in a classroom.
That's an excellent point. You can mask, but with those little ones, socially distancing will be pretty tough. So I want to go back to our guests now. Becky, we'll start with you. What's your take on the two calls, the two very different calls we just took there?
And it's true that there are a lot of rural areas that back in the spring were able to be in person fully because they're small communities. And if they did not have a lot of COVID circulating in the community, they would be able to keep it out of the schools, which is great. But as the second caller said, there are much, much bigger school districts that have to worry about a lot of students coming in from all over who may have different exposure levels. And for those, it can be so helpful to have this extra layer of mitigation, this extra masking. I would also say that I also appreciate the governor taking the fall, so to speak, for putting the mask mandate into place, because we have heard with bringing testing into schools that school districts, even if they want to do the right thing, get a lot of pushback from their communities. And so it's great for them to be able to have that taken out of their hands.
Excellent point. And Dr. Sundaresan, I wanted to ask you. Some parents and even lawmakers, as we heard at the top of the show, are insisting that this should be a local decision. And I've even seen parents organizing and wanting to hold meetings and, you know, are wanting to band together. You know, what is something that you would say to them from where you sit?
You know, every situation is different. Every community is different, depending on the resources they have, depending on how much they can actually put in place in terms of the mitigation. The gentleman that had called earlier, great. I think their school must have done a phenomenal job of making sure everybody is able to maintain those mitigation strategies, all three. Hand hygiene, masking, distance, ventilation in the schools. There are so many things that play into making sure that the transmission, in-school transmission is low. And I want to take a minute to applaud how much the school districts do in terms of trying to keep kids safe and trying to keep kids in school. So the teachers do a phenomenal job, like our second caller said, to make sure that the show goes on. Education is continued for the kids, and the mitigation strategies and the safety is also in place. I do also want to mention that IDPH and ISB have done a fantastic job with the frequently asked questions that does talk about these layered mitigation. And like Dr. Smith was mentioning earlier, when we are not able to keep that or maintain the physical distance aspect, some of these other mitigation
strategies. We've got to get to break, Doc. We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us. Listeners, welcome back. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, and she is a professor and chief of infectious disease at SIU School of Medicine and medical advisor to Sangamon County Department of Public Health. Also with us is Becky Smith, an epidemiologist and associate professor of pathobiology at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And we can take your calls about the governor's mask mandates for schools in Illinois or any other questions you may have about COVID-19, the Delta variant, or anything else for our guests. Call us now at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And I want to read a couple of texts that we got from our Text the 21st group. We asked for reactions to Governor Pritzker's mask mandate for schools. James in Champaign said, "We're sending our 15-year-old back to school this fall. Given how case numbers are rising, I'm relieved to hear of the mandate." Sal said, "I'm glad we have an intelligent governor. This is the only solution. We cannot risk the lives of our precious children by exposing them to this awful virus unprotected. Vaccination and masking should be mandatory." And Stephen said, "His mandates are essential and based on the facts. If anything, he did not go far enough. I believe requiring vaccinations is in order and in everyone's best interest. It's time to stop the piecemeal approach. Follow the data and do what is essential to end this pandemic." All right. So now we're going to go back to our guests. Dr. Sundaresan, I'm sorry for cutting you off there before the break. Some say that masking should be a choice between parent and child. But what do you say to parents who don't like this mandate?
You know, at this point, the risk is very high because of just the nature of the virus. That's the predominant strain circulating. More than 80% of the strains that have been identified are Delta. And there are three things that make this a variant of concern: very high transmissibility, and the fact that it can cause more severe disease, and that the response to vaccine is slightly less. It's not as much as the other strains. So these three characteristics make this variant of a variant of concern. So while we have this, I think it's a good thing to protect children who are ineligible for vaccination and protect our kids who are at risk, children who have immunocompromising conditions or other conditions where their antibody response despite vaccination in the 12 to 16 age groups has not been as good as we want them to be. So those two groups you really want to protect. And yes, masking definitely does work. We have an example from the flu numbers last year too. So masking definitely does help.
Okay, we're going to take another call. This is Susan in Pearl City, Illinois. Susan, go ahead.
Actually, it's Pam.
I'm sorry.
I'm glad that the governor has done the face mandate. My grandchildren will be starting school this fall. My granddaughter will be starting in kindergarten, my grandson in second grade. Those who say that it's the parents who should be deciding whether or not the children wear their face masks, with my grandson, he would do it. My granddaughter, as soon as she sees that one of her classmates isn't wearing her face mask or his face mask, hers would be off too. And just knowing that the mandate is there gives me security, knowing that she will be safer in school because everyone will be wearing their mask and she won't feel obligated to just take it off.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. Now we've got Kathy calling in from the Quad Cities. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yep, you're on.
My question is, I'm a bone-weary nurse with school kids, and I don't understand what the rationale is for not masking your children or giving your best effort. So my hat is off to teachers who have to implement that and to the governor for taking a stand. But I don't understand why anyone would be opposed to this if one person doesn't get sick, your grandma, your aunt, your cousin, the nice lady across the street. If one child is masked, that prevents them from spreading this terrible virus, this bone-weary medical person virus. Somebody help me understand why that could possibly be something you would not want to do.
Becky, any response there on just the hesitancy or the idea for some parents that masking, you know, is asking too much or that they don't want to mask their children? Anything that you guys are seeing there, you know, from boots on the ground?
I share the caller's just complete lack of comprehension of why you would not wear a mask. Masking is a very low risk activity. Your ears might get a little sore. You might miss seeing people's smiles, but that's okay. We can put up with missing seeing people's smiles in order to save the people that we love from this infection. So I also don't understand, other than knowing that so much around this virus has become politicized. And unfortunately, that politicization has caused people to react in ways that are not logical to me.
Okay. And Becky, we're going to stay with you and shift gears just a bit here. We're seeing workplaces starting to bring employees back. The kids are going back to school. Here at the U of I, we've been back since last week. And it's my understanding that you were part of the committee sort of giving guidance on that safe return to work. So given all the everything that we know about the Delta variant and breakthrough cases, and we're seeing, you know, 85 out of 102 counties having substantial or high transmission rates, even going back with a mask, you know, what do we need to know when we return? Is this risky? Is it safe? What do we need to know as we start to go back into our workplaces?
So there are risks, but we can, again, mitigate them with these layered interventions. So I have always recommended that vaccinated people, if indoors around people that they don't know or around people whose vaccine status they don't know, those people should be wearing masks. All of the people should be wearing masks. Also, just limiting the number of those close interactions that you have in a day would be a great way to limit your risk. Limiting how much time you spend in those public spaces. All of this helps us a lot. From the business standpoint, encouraging vaccinations, encouraging testing and masking, and also checking on their ventilation. We know ventilation has been a huge, important part of this virus spread. So making sure that the ventilation in your buildings is as high as it can be, or adding additional ventilation if possible, all of that would be just really helpful at decreasing our risk. I think we can do this safely, although I'm still nervous about schools, but with the mask mandate, it makes me a little bit more confident that we can start to bring kids back to schools and people back to businesses safely.
Okay. And Dr. Sundaresan, we've been hearing a lot about variants, Delta, Gamma. and Lambda. Can you remind our listeners about what we know about these variants and how concerned are you about them?
Viruses, when they replicate, they don't really make good copies of themselves. They are, to say, imperfect when they replicate. And when they do that, some of the variants are weak, they just die out. Some of the changes in the replicants that they make are not that strong. But when the viruses, like I said earlier, are more transmissible, they can cause more severe disease and have some power against the antibody response to the vaccine. And it's a little bit less as compared to the other strains. Those characteristics make them a variant of concern, according to WHO and CDC. So, the more people we get vaccinated, the higher the herd immunity, the less there are chances for us to encounter with these variants or changes. So I think the key here is trying to get as many people vaccinated, trying to drive up those rates so we don't see these phenomena.
Okay, I think we may have a call coming in. Do we have a call? All right, let's take that call. This is Susan in Normal. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi, I just had a question about transmission. It was earlier, you were speaking earlier on in the radio show, and you had the senator come on and say that there was low transmission. And I know one of the doctors reacted to that comment by saying that there were the mitigations. So I wanted to know if that data about low transmission between among children or teachers and children was based on the Alpha strain versus the Delta, which we know now is more transmissible. So that was my question.
Doc, we'll start with you.
That's a great question. Yes, I think most of the data, most of the circulating strains at that time was, in fact, not even the Alpha. Even Alpha was not recognized till September or October last year. So yes, a lot of the data was based on that. With Delta, in fact, we need to worry a little bit more because a number called R0 that we track, that is the transmissibility of the virus, is almost six times higher. As compared to the other strains. In fact, Alpha variant in itself is more transmissible and Delta is about 50% more transmissible than Alpha. So yes, I think that becomes all the more important with Delta variant, and the data we had was with other strains, not Delta.
Okay, all right. Anything to add there, Becky?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And to remember when Dr. Sundaresan mentioned that R0 number being much higher, the thing that masks and ventilation and vaccines do is to bring down that R0 number. So the higher it is, the more we have to do to bring that number back down to where the virus is under control. So if the R0 is going up, then we need to increase all of our other mitigations.
Okay. And Becky, just staying with you, as an epidemiologist, you know, how concerning are these variants and what does it mean in our battle against COVID-19?
The variants are always concerning, especially as we get information showing that they are more infectious. The thing that we're most concerned about at this point is a variant emerging that is able to escape the protection given by vaccines. You know, we know that breakthrough cases do happen with Delta, but we don't have any evidence to suggest that it is able to escape the vaccine protection more so than others. But the more circulation we have, the more variants we will have, and the likelihood that the vaccines become less useful goes up. And that is concerning because these vaccines are our potential path forward. So if we have more variants and those variants then make the vaccines less effective, then we are going to have to consider using some of these other mitigations long term to prevent COVID spread.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I want to thank both of my guests, Dr. Vidya Sundaresan. She is the professor of chief infectious diseases at SIU School of Medicine and medical advisor to Sangamon County Department of Public Health, and Becky Smith, epidemiologist and associate professor of pathology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thank you so much for joining us today. And if you're just joining us, we want to talk about those mask mandates. Give us a call, 800-222-9455. And now we'd like to bring in another guest. With school returning, that also means the return of school sports. And what's that going to look like for this upcoming year? Craig Anderson is the executive director for the IHSA, the Illinois High School Association, and he joins me now. Craig, welcome back to the 21st.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. So let's talk about what sports are going to look like in the fall. Give us a quick rundown.
Yeah, so we're actually today we're starting our fall practices across all of our fall sports. So we're excited about that. And it's our anticipation that we'll have regular timelines and can conclude all of our fall sports with state championships like we've traditionally done. And so we're excited about that. Many have been discussing the mask mandates and the recent action by Governor Pritzker. We have fallen in line with that recommendation to our schools. And in the fall, the only sport that would be generally affected is the sport of volleyball, which is our only sport that is indoors that would require the masking. So that's our recommendation to our schools, that they adhere to the guidance that IDPH and the governor have put forward, and that for the sport of volleyball, they would participate wearing a mask. In general, I think our fall timeline looks good, and you know, barring any increases and significant spread, I think we could hopefully anticipate transitioning to our winter sports on time, and then the same for our spring sports later this school year.
Now, I'm thinking of, you know, offensive, you know, linemen on the football field lining up inches from each other, breathing heavily, shouting from competing teams where, you know, transmission rates could be different, you know, and we know that the Delta variant is more transmissible. You know, any thought there about masking for outdoor sports as well, or how, what could that look like?
Well, yeah, we would lean on obviously the guidance of the medical experts, and that's not me. So we're going to lean on IDPH, obviously, and the guidance they offer. We did, I believe, successfully conduct 6 weeks of football, and that's six competitive weeks. And so with practices, it was approximately a 10 to 11 week season. But we did require masking during that time, and we're fortunate to successfully conduct those activities. I would just add that, you know, throughout the summer, our schools had been engaging in football-related activities, none of which included full contact of participants or linemen in the circumstances you described. But we believe that was successful in general, unless I believe most schools went masks optional during the summertime during the activities they were conducting. So, yeah, there's definitely the possibilities, but I think the benefit of us being outdoors obviously helps us during the fall season for football. And and so we're hopeful with other mitigation factors in place that we'll be able to conduct football successfully.
Okay. We asked our listeners to send in some texts, and here's one from Kyle. He writes, I think sports should be put on hold this year, especially since COVID-19 cases are continuing to rise across the nation. I think we're trying to get back to normal too quickly, and it's only going to cause more heartache, more health issues, and more frustration as we re-enter sheltering in place. Another listener who didn't leave a name said, I'm comfortable with my kids participating, just don't understand the adults resisting vaccination. It's selfish and putting us all at risk. Any quick thought there? Okay, we're going to go to break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain in for Brian Mackey today. And if you're just joining us, we are talking with Craig Anderson. He is the executive director for the IHSA, the Illinois High School Association. And we've been talking about sports and COVID this fall and the mask mandates and sort of what sports will look like. And I did read two texts right before the break, and we have another one that says, this is John, and he says, no, it's stupid to wear masks at sports, especially outside. So, we need to explore that a little bit. That kind of leans into our question, our next question. So, will masks be required for both indoor and outdoor sports, Craig?
Yeah, currently, again, just adhering to the guidelines offered by the governor last week, our outdoor sports will not require masking at this time. Indoor sports such as volleyball, which is the indoor sport we offer in the fall, will require masking. At least that's the guidance we're offering our schools based upon the governor's mandates. When we transition to the winter, unless there are new recommendations, we'll maintain the indoor guidelines of masking similar to what we did last school year.
And any final words on what you want folks to know?
Yeah, you know, you asked a question about, somebody submitted a question related to, you know, why should we be introducing sports as we're seeing cases rise? I guess I would relate back to the fact that sports do so much for our students, not just sports, but activities in general. And those additional opportunities for growth are so pivotal for our young people to grow and experience teamwork and winning and losing and all those things, that to shut that down, I don't believe would be healthy either mentally or physically for our students. And so that's why, you know, I push for our continued opportunity to engage students in these athletics and activities.
Especially in these times, if you want your kids to be able to play, there's got to be some give and take here is what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay. It, you know, we don't really want to mask up when we're competing, but if it's going to be a way to maintain our safety and to maintain our teams being able to compete, that's what we have to do.
All right. Thank you so much. I want to thank Craig Anderson, Executive Director of the IHSA. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.